Joining us now from Washington, D.C., right in the middle of a budget battle, 2nd District Congressman Scott Ridgel. Congressman, great to have you with us.
Good morning, John. Good to be back with you, always.
You know, it's almost like you're with us every day because of the Ridgel Minute. So you're on every hour.
I've enjoyed doing that. Actually, I think you can appreciate this. It's a little harder to write something for just a minute than it sounds. You know, every sentence, every word really has to, as I describe it, has to pull. We do give thought to it, and I hope it's a constructive contribution to the public square and to this debate that's taking place across our country.
Hey, I think it is without a doubt, and we want to thank you for doing that. We always look forward to when they're updated, and I've gotten a lot of great comments on it, so keep them coming.
Very good. We will.
Okay, let's go right to a couple key items. I want to go right to the Paul Ryan budget, which got out of committee last night. I know you were involved in that. You made a speech on the House floor. Your thoughts?
Well, I think it really shows the difference between the two parties, John. You know, we're not perfect. We're imperfect in the Republican conference. But that said, I'm really proud of the leadership that we have shown and putting this budget forward. Now, you know, I'm sure that some within the conference and a lot of Republicans said, why are we even doing this? We have a two-year budget. Let's just lay low, kind of get through the midterms, lay low, don't call attention to these things. And we actually had a spirited debate inside the budget committee on that. I was among those who prevailed, who said, no, we need to have this debate. We need to bring this forward. That's part of what leadership is, to bring forward to the American people kind of the state of our union and where we need to go from here. And I'm glad that our side prevailed. The chairman Ryan was advocating the same thing. And what a contrast. It took all day. There were 30 amendments offered by our Democratic colleagues. I think all but two raised spending, and we added it up. They had about $1.5 trillion in cumulative tax increases there. Not one amendment in any way addressed mandatory spending. So, look, I was real proud of our budget conference last night, and we did pass it. It was on a party line vote, and hopefully we'll have enough votes on the House floor to get this thing over the curb.
Common Sense News Time, 9:15. This is the John Frederick Show across Virginia. We're with Republican Congressman from the 2nd District of Virginia, Scott Ridgel. Congressman Ridgel, $18 trillion in debt approaching. No end in sight. You know, every Democrat I have on, I ask the same question. I think it's legitimate. Obviously, you're okay with $17 trillion in debt. Obviously, you're okay with $18 trillion in debt. Is there a number that keeps you up at night? Now, they all say, oh, well, you know, I'm concerned about it. But then there's never an amendment or a budget to cut the spending or cut the growth of spending. I don't understand what their plan is here.
As objective as I can be on this, John, I agree with you. I'm sure if we searched far and wide, you can find a Democrat or two, perhaps in the House, that is speaking out, you know, in a definitive way. And when I mean definitive, I mean actually addressing the root cause of it, which is the spending side. You know, what we saw yesterday were really these false equations, these false propositions that, hey, let's just tackle this corporate jet thing, and you know we can do this and do this and do this. And I don't know if you saw my opening remarks or not. I guess this is a little bit of a plug for that. Then anybody can go to ridgel.house.gov. My opening statement there was something along the lines of this. I said, look, you know, my Democratic friends want to. Their basic proposition is we care more, therefore we're going to spend more, or we're spending more, therefore we care more. And I categorically reject the premise, John. And I said, look, it's because we care that we're doing these things. We can reform these programs, have the essential services that are needed to be provided by the federal government, but at the same time meet our duty to not only the American taxpayer, the current taxpayer, but to our children and grandchildren, and by responsibly reining these things in. And it really was troubling to me, truly was troubling to me, as I watched the thing unfold, and not one of these Democratic amendments controlled spending. Not one.
It's a frightening situation. I remember, Congressman, going into your office, remember you showed me that chart where basically, basically when you look at the chart, it's like the amount of money we're taxing and getting in and the amount of money we're spending, and you look at the projections, and it's guaranteed to increase the deficit, increase the debt in perpetuity.
And well, these were, and there is a day of reckoning. And look, you know, you say, well, Scott, are you being an alarmist? Well, yeah, I'm at a point. I call it a clarion call from Canon 418. And I want to reach out to my Democratic friends and my independent friends in Virginia, too, and across our region and say, look, just look at this as objectively as you can and make a proper assessment based on the facts, not even what I'm saying or what's contained in some of the Republican conference, but just talking points. But look at what the Congressional Budget Office data is, and these programs are literally running out of money to protect and preserve Medicare. We've got to reform it to protect and preserve Social Security. We've got to make modest but meaningful reforms, and look, to ignore that and to not do anything about it, frankly, I think is a moral failure. And I'm not questioning motive of my friend, but I am absolutely questioning their judgment. I am absolutely questioning their wisdom as it relates to these financial matters. And I do not believe that my Democratic friends are meeting their obligation. Now, let me in the same breath, John, share with you this, that Chris Van Hollen, ranking member, he unloaded on us. His first opening statement was this, something like this, basically that we're calling for the repeal of the Unaffordable Care Act in our budget. That's true. Well, look, embedded in the Unaffordable Care Act is $1 trillion of taxes. But we largely rely on that revenue stream to make our own budget balance. Now, I take no pleasure in pointing out the deficiency here, but I see one, and it bothers me. And I'll probably take a hit for saying this publicly, but so be it. But you see where I'm going with this? We've got $1 trillion built into our own budget to balance, and it's where does that revenue come from? It comes from the Unaffordable Care Act. So if, in fact, we were to repeal it, which is what I wanted to do and still want to do, and replace it with something better, we'd have to come up with $1 trillion somewhere. I mean, if anything, it shows us how serious our situation is.
So basically what you're saying is in the budget proposed, $1 trillion comes from the Affordable Care Act, the variety of taxes they have. So if you repeal that, well, then that trillion goes away. That's got to be made up. So now basically the taxes from the Obamacare are now part of operating the government.
Well, yeah. And look, in all candor, there was an argument made, a rebuttal made by our side on that, by a staff member who I greatly respect. That said, I didn't find it that compelling as a businessman. Mm-hmm. And now, look, we've got to use the CBO data, and it's law and all of that. That said, you know, what we said was, and our assumption was that we're going to be revenue neutral. Any tax reform that we do is revenue neutral, but it's based on, you know, the revenue stream that we have now, at least the projected one. And that, look, I deal with facts, John. Sometimes it takes me into some rough places, okay?
Right.
But the fact is that our budget incorporates those revenues. And I'm not sure we had any choice based on how CBO scores things, but I think we ought to talk about it, because it makes the point, as I mentioned earlier, that we're really in a serious situation here. And all of us, Republicans, Democrats, Independents, and folks are just fed up with everybody. We're all in this together.
Right, but it seems like from what you're saying, we're not really dealing with this in a serious way if you're taking $1 trillion from the Obamacare taxes, when on the other hand, you're trying to repeal Obamacare, which has been one of my issues from day one, that the minute this thing takes root, you're never going to get rid of it. This is certainly one of the reasons. Let me ask you this, Congressman. When you're in your budget conferee meeting, and there's 30 people there, just you don't have to mention any names, but just in like a broad brush, like how many people that are in that actually ever ran a business, balanced a payroll, met a budget, had to get sales to keep their doors open. How many of those people actually did that?
Well, this is, you know, a non-scientific response here. I'd say probably about, if I think about it, perhaps maybe 70% on our side and about 30% on our Democratic colleagues' side. And look, don't hold me to that, but that's my best assessment.
So, I mean, you would think with 70% of Republicans that ran a business, they would understand this stuff, but... I mean, it's just frustrating.
If I may, I didn't mean to cut you off there, but let me be clear here. It's a good budget. I'm proud of it. I'm going to get hit politically for standing with it and even saying what I just said. That's all right. I can handle that.
Right.
It's the right thing to do, and I think the way the a lot of this CBO stuff is written, we've really got to use the revenue stream that's before us. All I would say is this, is that we need to go one more step, and I'm doing it here, is just to say, it's almost like a footnote, say, hey, look, you know, we're including $1 trillion here of revenue that comes from the Unaffordable Care Act, and if that thing indeed is unwound, and it won't be, and at least directly, we can reform it, improve it, and maybe certainly if we get a Senate majority, a Republican Senate majority, we can do a whole lot more, but... basically, we've got to use that revenue stream. I just want us to be upfront about it. But on the expense side, we are the one who just busted through the winner's tape at the end of the race, and our Democratic colleagues, we can't even see them in the rearview mirror. Mm-hmm. They aren't leading in this area in any respect, John, mm-hmm. in terms of responsibly grabbing that third rail of politics. And that's what's got to be done to meet our obligation to our children and grandchildren. Every age group, state, doesn't matter. You know, whatever one's background, again, like I said, we're all in this together. We've got to make good decisions now.
I remember I was in Newt Gingrich's office interviewing him in February of 95. And... I remember asking him what this question. I said, Mr. Speaker, what is keeping you up at night? He had just taken over. And he said, when you delve into entitlements, he said, by 2020, the whole system goes bankrupt. And this is back in 95. And so Here we are, it's 2014, and it's still not being addressed, right?
Yeah, well, that's our duty. As elected members of both the House and Senate, and of course the President as well, and you know, you and I talked about the time that I sat across from him, the President, and said directly to him, in a respectful but firm way, that what was on my mind was that he was not providing the leadership and needed in this critical hour in our country. And we engaged in that discussion, and I left convinced that that he just didn't. His assessment of the threat is not nearly as great as I assess it. And John, frankly, truthfully, I hope I'm wrong. You know, I hope it's not as great as it is. But I've been on the winning side and the losing side of leverage. You know, in the private sector. You can use leverage to grow a business. It can be a very powerful tool. But if you get on the wrong side of it, you can get in a lot of trouble in a very short amount of time. And here's the practical adverse impact. A simple 1% increase in interest rates, the technical term, 100 basis points, 100 basis points results in $150 billion over 10 years. And as you know, interest rates can only go one way, up, and a full 2 point or 200 basis point increase would not be unexpected, $300 billion over the next 10 years. And that part, if you take the mandatory spend, is already two-thirds, and you throw that interest on there.
Congressman, one thing that I just got to ask you, heard, Chairman Ryan on our montage saying, hey, we got to get rid of Obamacare, but yet he's got $1 trillion of Obamacare taxes in his plan.
Yeah, John, there's a lot of challenges facing our country, and that's certainly one of them. Let me share, though, as well, that we paused last night as a group, not as Democrats and Republicans, but as fellow Americans, including the staff and all those who were in the room. Because that's when I got the news. That's when we all got the news about the Fort Hood tragedy.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking about that before our call and frankly, listening to the news on the break. And, you know, it's just our hearts go out to those families and the victims and the families of the victims. And we've got to get to the bottom of what's happening at these gates. Of course, this one appears to be, at least perhaps, and I don't want to be speculating as to what the soldier had experienced, but those who have been traumatized need all the help that we can possibly give them. And we also know, though, at the Navy Yard and what happened at the Norfolk Naval Base was more of a security lapse. At least it certainly appears to be at this stage of the investigation. So anyway, we're going to work on that, but we owe it really to honor the sacrifice of our men and women in uniform, quite frankly, and also to meet the obligation we have to the next generation. We've got to be upfront and bold about the solutions that are needed to get our country on a better track. And look, I think there is a glitch there that all we need to do is talk about it. That's all. We just need to talk about it. It's not that we did anything improper. We just need to talk about it because, in fact, I think we had to incorporate that in order to get the scoring right. At least that's my understanding of it through CBO. But we advanced a solution that actually balances the budget. In contrast, the president's budget never balances, John. Mm-hmm. Just let that soak in.
Well, and it not only does it not balance, it continues to grow the deficit. I mean, I was saying earlier, and grow the debt. You know, I would feel better if the president said, look, I'm fine with $18 trillion in debt. You know, we kind of figured out how to deal with that. Yeah, interest might go up or down, but, you know, we've kind of figured that out. So I'm going to have $18 trillion of debt in perpetuity, and we're going to figure out how to not go beyond that. I would at least have respect for him then. But basically what they're saying is $18 trillion, $19 trillion, $20. It just goes on in perpetuity, and I mean, and it keeps growing, which makes no sense to
That's
anybody.
Right. And anytime we as Republicans go out there and try to, in a responsible way, reform these things, particularly mandatory spending, which is the principal driver of our deficits, we're not met with, I think, a good faith offer. Let's work something out here. Every time it's used against us in elections and misused against us. And look, our party is not perfect, and there's some times when I wince, you know, when I see what Republicans do too. These political parties, they're not perfect, but you know, as I look at it, the values that we're advancing, the solutions that we're offering, I'm really proud of the Budget Committee. I'm proud of Chairman Ryan. I'm proud of our conference. I hope we have enough votes to get this passed next week. There's a little bit of question about that. There's some other dynamics that I don't have time to get into today, but I hope we're able to pass it next week because we need to do that. We need to pass the budget. You know, we've been consistent, and I think in a good way, very admirable way in that, our Democratic colleagues have really faltered. 4 out of the last 5 years, they haven't produced a budget. There's a real difference here between the two parties. John, I've got to run. I got to get it to some meetings, but I appreciate the opportunity to speak with you and to catch up with you and to work through some tough and some important some topics today. And our thoughts and prayers are with our soldiers and the families at Fort Hood.
All right, sir. We appreciate the time that you spent with us today and the access that we have. And we also appreciate, above all else, sir, your forthrightness and your candor. Thank you so much.
I appreciate that. Okay. Thanks so much, John.